You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your hosts, Josh Furlong and Josh Newman.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. I'm Josh Furlong, joined as always with Josh Newman. We had a little bit of technical difficulties this morning, but we're back on the rails, so to speak, so we'll see.
We're generally off the rails, but for this particular episode, we figured we'd get on the rails.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see how it goes. But joining us today, we've got a special guest, Nick Daschle. He's the beat writer at the Oregonian. He covers Oregon State, and so we're happy to have him here. Nick, how are you doing today?
Good.
Good. Good to have you. So first off, we have the Friday night game. You know, this will be a matchup between two top 25 teams. First off, you know, Razor Stadium is renovated. What should fans that are coming there expect? Is there anything different or anything that maybe people should understand about the stadium now?
Well, it's quite a bit different just because of, you know, just the atmosphere. Not really the atmosphere, but the amenities, you know, that fans can take part in. They have this new area called Beaver Street, which is a lot of different food and concession stands, and it's a big area where people can congregate and they can actually watch the game from this big long bar across the it extends from end zone to end zone. It's pretty close to the field too. Even if you have the cheapest, you know, if you have the cheapest ticket in the place, you can still go down there and watch. You can watch the whole game from there if you wanted to. You know, they have new LED lights in there, and they have the ability to, you know, to flash on and off and change colors and things like that. And this will really be the first time, you know, since they opened that they're able to do that, because it's a night, kind of a night game. You know, it won't be a night, totally night until probably halftime, but that'll be something new. And the place is just going to be louder than it's been. Well, actually Utah was here in 21. So it was a full stadium then, but much louder than last year even. So, you know, it's actually the first time, you know, this will be the third game. This will be the first time, you know, they're really taking this place for a test drive to see, you know, just what Reser Stadium means in a big game. Because the first two were San Diego State and UC Davis, and those were pretty much over early in the second half.
Nick, you start looking at this matchup and you maybe factor in how much of an impact the weather might have, right? It's been raining for much of the week in Corvallis, right? The forecast right now calls for rain on Friday morning. How much might the weather impact what Oregon State wants to do?
Well, I don't think it's going to matter. I mean, the weather hasn't been, I don't think it's been terrible this whole week. It's been a little wet, but I don't think it's going to be a big deal. In fact, I don't think it's calling for rain during the game,
right?
I mean, that could change, obviously, but I don't know. I think they're used to it. They practiced indoors, I think, Monday, and then they've been outdoors since. So, I don't see it being a factor.
Coming into this season, it was always like Oregon State needed a quarterback, and I think they could take that next step, right? Like it was always, they had a fantastic team. They got DJ Uiagalelei. You know, they felt like that was going to be the case. And then he hasn't always been perfect. I think you wrote about it this week that Jonathan Smith is still saying he's our guy. You know, what's kind of going into what DJ Uiagalelei is doing right now? Kind of where's he at and where is this Oregon State offense with him under center?
Well, it's a combination of factors. One, Oregon State's going to run the ball a lot. And so Jonathan and Brian Lindgren, the offensive coordinator, said, you know, it's, you know, I'm not saying they're making excuses for him, but it is a little difficult to get into a rhythm when you're handing the ball off three or four times in a row, and then you're asked to make a throw. I don't know, the receivers are getting as much separation as they'd like. They haven't used the tight ends as much as they want to. I kind of wonder, you know, how much have they been, if they've been saving some of this stuff for conference play and whatnot, but I guess we'll find out. But I think DJ's been, he's been solid. You know, everybody just keeps wondering when Aiden Childs is going to not necessarily start, but get a, maybe a turn just as a changeup guy, because he's a little bit different than DJ. He's gonna do run a little bit more. And he's just, I mean, he's a fantastic athlete. So, you know, that's something to watch. I don't anticipate him playing Friday because it is Utah, and we saw what Utah did to a freshman quarterback last week. But I mean, it's possible. But they're going to ride with DJ. That's been a Jonathan staple. When he names a starter, he rides them until they pretty much prove they can't do the job.
You know, one of the big storylines here in Salt Lake City this week is the fact that, you know, Nate Johnson is starting at quarterback, and you know the offense is kind of in mud, right? They struggled pretty badly against UCLA. Then you look at this Oregon State defense, right? They gave up 528 yards last week against Washington State. Nick, you wrote that for now, that defensive effort is a one-off. What are you seeing from this defense, and you know how concerned should Oregon State fans be about what they saw against Wazoo?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of tend to think that was a one-off. Traditionally, they've had trouble with Washington State. Right. I mean, I was going through, you know, Jonathan's, you know, last 5 years, just for example. I mean, it seems like a lot of the worst performances have been against Washington State, and particularly in Pullman. So I don't know, and I'm sure Trent Bray has had a lot of sleepless nights this past week, because he does not take this well, what happened in Pullman. And Utah's kind of the perfect storm, I guess, for a defense, because they're not throwing the ball that well. And Oregon State's strength is stopping the run. I'm not saying Utah won't score some points. I just think, you know, they're going to see more dynamic offenses than what Utah's going to present. Unless, of course, Cam Rising is not going to play. Is that correct? Or is he going to – is there any chance he might play?
Indications. It's Thursday morning at 10:20 Mountain Time. Josh, correct me if I'm wrong. I would say indications are it's Nate Johnson.
Agreed.
Yeah. So, I mean, if Utah plays with what they're, you know, what we think is going to be on, who's going to be on the field, I mean, I think Oregon State's going to present a big problem for Utah's offense. But, I mean, on the other hand, Utah's defense is going to present a pretty big problem for Oregon State, which is going to lead to a pretty low scoring game, I think.
The last 2 years, these games have gone other ends, right? Obviously, Oregon State got the better of Utah the last time they were in Corvallis. Utah got the better of Oregon State at Rice-Eccles Stadium. But in your view, at least recently under the Jonathan Smith era, what makes these games so competitive? Is there a specific matchup, or what do you see that makes them competitive?
Well, I don't know. Was last year's game all that competitive? I mean...
Clark Phillips didn't think so.
the problem last year was the start. I mean, Oregon State got off to a horrible start, and they were never in. I think if they got off to a better start, that game would have been pretty competitive. But I don't know. I mean, there's just, you know, two teams that kind of play similar styles. They both, you know, like to run the ball. They, you know, they're not gonna air it out, you know, 20 times way down the field. They, you know, they're going to run and play defense. That's kind of, I mean, if you're picking two teams out of the Pac-12 that play a similar style, it's Utah and Oregon State. So, you know, from that standpoint, I guess, you know, if, as long as they both have similar talent, which recently they've been, you know, on the same, roughly on the same page, obviously Utah's been better, but yeah, you're going to get competitive games.
Sort of in the background at this point, right now, look, conference realignment has essentially sort of settled down a bit now that we're actually in the football season. There's games happening, but as far as Oregon State goes, in the background, you do have this Pac-2 situation and the court hearings, and the future of the conference is kind of hanging in the balance based on those court hearings. Is that at all a distraction for the coaching staff? Do the players see these things? Is that being talked about at all as Oregon State goes through its season now?
I mean, how could it not a little bit? I mean, right. 'Cause you know, we're asking questions all the time and they say no, but I mean, you get asked enough, they know that there's issues, and you know, I'm sure a lot of them are thinking, okay, let's get through the season and see what things look like. But I mean, just for today, I mean, my job is, you know, it's a crap fest right now. It's football. Today there's a public hearing with the state legislature, the committee on higher education, with Oregon State people talking about the future, you know, the Pac-12 and how it's impacting Oregon State. And it's just like every other day, there's something with the, you know, the court hearing that there's a date set now, and
right,
and it's going to be all sorts of, it just never ends. And so, and you know, I'm sure the players want to know what's going on, where are we at, where, you know, what's going to happen after the season. And so, and the coaches too. And so, I mean, I don't think it's been a big issue, but I just think, you know, it'd be better if it was settled.
We know you're a busy guy, so we want to get you out on this final question. But, you know, we ask a lot of the times, how does a team lose a game or how do they win a game? In your view, Oregon State is expected to be the favorite in this game, at least according to Vegas. How does Oregon State lose this game? What has to go wrong for them to lose this game?
I think a couple of turnovers on short fields would hurt their chances. I mean, I think if you make Utah drive the length of the field, you know, three or four times, I got to like Oregon State's chances in that situation. Oregon State's 13-1 at Reser over the last 2.5 years. And the only loss was the loss to USC last year, when you can make a case they probably should have won that game. They've been tough at home, but turnovers obviously can make a difference. They haven't been bad in that area, but you know, you give Utah a couple of easy ones, and in a game that doesn't figure to have a lot of points to begin with, and that's how Oregon State could lose.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much, Nick. We appreciate your time, and we look forward to seeing you up there in Corvallis and seeing how this game plays out Friday night.
All right.
Thanks, Nick.
Sure. Thanks.
That was Nick Daschle from the Oregonian. You know, this is a game that is two teams basically mirror image of each other. It's I think Jonathan Smith has even kind of talked about over the years as he's grown that he's kind of modeled his program after Kyle Whittingham, and he's seen what he's done. And you see it, right? Like, you see they like to stop the run first. They like to load up that way. They're not going to necessarily air it out like a lot of these other Pac-12 teams. And so this is Utah looking itself in the mirror, probably looking itself in the mirror in like 2017, 2016, somewhere around that era, where really good defense, really good team. They can run the ball. They've got Damian Martinez, who's a phenomenal running back.
Yeah.
But they're still missing that piece, right? And they're still missing probably a quarterback. And at least we haven't seen it out of DJ Uiagalelei against tough competition. And, you know, maybe Nick's right. Maybe they are saving a little bit. I think when he was saying all that stuff, I was just kind of laughing in my head. Like, everything that he said is exactly what we're talking about with Utah right now. With
we said the same thing on the on the show yesterday, how maybe like Andy Ludwig is not going deep into the bag. And yeah, I mean, that's an interesting notion at Oregon State. We're going to get into this Oregon State team, but the defensive effort that they put up against Washington State,
not good enough.
No good.
No.
Against anybody, no good.
No, and I think that's, you know, look, this is a team that keys in on the run. They're going to try to stop the run. And Washington State's not the, you know, the Mike Leach type air raid offense. They are passing it a fair amount, but they're not Mike Leach. And so it's not a fair comparison to say, oh, well, Washington State's always been that way. Well, no, they haven't. They've actually changed quite a bit. But this is an Oregon State defense that is very vulnerable in their secondary. They don't have the dudes that are able to stop them like they do up front, right? Like, if you want to run, you've got to run hard and you've got to find creative ways to be able to do it. But this secondary for Oregon State, you know, they're not quite up to snuff that way. You know, they're going to give some yards, and it's still going to be a difficult place, right? Like, I think you're going to see a different effort than what Washington State presented. But to that point, you've got to have a Utah offense that does anything, right? Like, we haven't seen really anything where Utah's aired it out. So I guess let's start there, right? Let's start with Nate Johnson, because we are expecting that Nate's the starter. This is where the frustration comes in, and you know, this is now 2 weeks where Cam was expected to kind of be the starter. He was probably getting more of the first team reps. I don't know that for certain. Based on what we've heard, that's kind of been the indication. Kyle's kind of even intimated that as well. So I think we've expected that Cam's been there, and then the last minute they are shifting back to Nate Johnson. It feels like it's done a disservice to Nate, right? Like, I feel like if you're trying to set him up to succeed, this hasn't been, you know, a great situation for him. Do you think, based on this offense, that this is a problem with the coaching staff, or is this where does this lie? Like, what's going on right now?
Yeah, that's a loaded question, and I don't think there's any like single answer. I mean, look, objectively, the players on the field have to be doing their job, whatever they are asked to do. I wrote about Nate Johnson this morning and how he, you know, apologized on X on Saturday for the way the game played out and how that was, you know, a measure of accountability on his part that probably wasn't necessary. I think anybody watching understands that he needs to be better, right? There's been some ball security issues, right? I think he fumbled twice,
yep.
Plus a botched handoff. So you can call it 2-3, whatever you want, but there's been some ball security stuff. We've talked on the show about how Ludwig has not gone deep into the bag and that he is trying to give Nate Johnson what he believes he can handle and what he can execute. So Nate Johnson has to be better. And has the play calling from Ludwig and Kyle Whittingham, has it been vanilla or blah? Yeah, probably. Like, you're going to the run like 72-74% of the time. I think it's a little hard to like really like dive into the complaining aspect of it because you're still winning games.
Yeah.
The play calling is not costing you games and Nate Johnson is not costing you games. Now, this particular matchup, I don't think Ludwig needs to go all the way to the bottom of the bag, but you need to give Oregon State something else to think about, right? You cannot be pounding the rock 74% of the time, because up to now you haven't had much of a passing attack. So if you're going to try to pound the rock, Oregon State's going to put 7-8 guys in the box and make Nate Johnson throw it. So you got to do something else. You have to throw it a little bit more. I'm not saying you have to like air it out 35 times, but you got to do something else. You can't just be running. I agree with Nick Daschle. I think this is a low scoring game. It doesn't strike me as 14-7 like the UCLA game was, but I'm like 17-14. I'm sitting here now on Thursday morning, honestly can't decide who's going to win. But I do think it's going to be a low scoring game. But if you're going to get out of there with a win, you got to have Nate Johnson doing something else than what he's been doing. You have to connect on some of this stuff. And look, a lot of this is, look, you're still banged up, right? You don't have Brand Keithy. You don't have the, you know, the big pass catching tight end like you have had in the past. So that's kind of a detriment. You know, keep feeding Mikey Matthews out of the slot, get Devon Vele more involved. If you can get the pass going a little bit more than you have, you can maybe set up some play action stuff. But bottom line is you have to be doing more through the air than what you've been doing to this point.
Yeah, and I agree with a lot of those points there. And I think, you know, as we sit here Thursday morning, I'm in agreement that I don't know which way to go on this. I probably am leaning Utah right now, and I don't know why. I think their defense is probably better, and Utah can potentially exploit Oregon State a little bit better than I think Oregon State can exploit Utah. But with that being said, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Oregon State pulls away and wins by double digits either. So, but the point there being, you know, we expect Jaquindon Jackson is probably not going to play as well. I don't know if he'll travel. I would assume he travels, but who knows based on his injury. That's an area where, you know, you've got Jalen Glover is now your starting running back, and he's talented and he's good, but like you mentioned, they're going to load up that box. They're going to put 7 guys in that box, or at least look that way to put some pressure there. You know, 4-man fronts, 3, whatever it may be, they're yeah. going to force Nate Johnson to pass. And, you know, that is a good thing for Utah if they can be successful, and it's a bad thing for Oregon State potentially because they haven't been as good. And so if Utah can find success there, I think they can do it. But I think that's where Utah just has to let Nate cook, right? Like, you hear that phrase, let Nate cook. Right. I think they have to, right? Like, you have to be okay with letting Nate make mistakes, right? He's going to throw an interception at one point, like, right? Like,
at some point,
yeah. He has to. Like, and he's been close, right? Like, there should have been one that had they been dropped. But, like, I understand Kyle is so risk-averse, right? He doesn't not want turnovers. And especially in games like yeah. this where it's going to come down to, you know, probably a field goal or whatever. So you hope Cole Becker's back and is ready to go. But This is the worry that I have if you're looking into this, is this is going to be such a tight game that Utah is going to continue to be vanilla because they're so worried about turning it over. But I, like, you've got to come to a point where this game, that you can lose this game. And I know that sounds crazy because this is a tight conference race and it's going to be really difficult and you can't really lose any game. So I get that. But projecting forward, like if this Cam Rising thing continues the way that it's been, you have to let Nate explore like what his depths can be, right? And if you're not doing that, you're doing yourself a disservice for this year. You're doing yourself a disservice for next year. Because let's say Cam can't go for Cal. Is he going to be ready for USC? Is he going to be ready for Oregon? Is he going to be ready for those games? I don't know. And, you know, I'm kind of getting a little, I'm a little frustrated by it because we keep coming back to this. And I know there's a lot in play there. Cam has to feel comfortable. He's got to get cleared. I don't think the coaching staff is necessarily just doing this on purpose. But at the same time, there comes a point where you have to at least give Nate a chance, because if he is your quarterback for the remainder of the year, if for whatever reason Cam can't go or he's limited or he's favoring his knee or whatever it may be, you have to let Nate go. And we're not seeing that. So if you can't do it this week against a pass defense that should, in theory, give you some room to grow, I don't know when you can do it. And then this just turns into another slog fest that's not going to be great. And that's really frustrating to watch on TV.
Now, I'm listening to everything you're saying, and the last point you made just now about maybe it turns into a slog fest, that's interesting. Utah is 4-0. If they win this game, they're 5-0 with the bye coming and with the meat of the schedule still in front of you. I don't disagree with anything you said, but to me, and I've said this before, this is, for as long as Cam is out, for as long as it's Nate Johnson and not Cam, you are in survival mode.
Sure.
And it doesn't matter. It ultimately doesn't matter how you get this done. Whatever gadget, whatever you have to do on offense, whatever you have to do, it is a matter of survival. Because if you get out of there, again, look, tough place to play. Okay, Utah went up there in 21. They were up 14-0 immediately. They had two drives die inside the five with no points. They had a punt blocked, the return for a touchdown, a second. It was a mess. It's a tough place to play. Very tough place to play. If it's a matter of survival, if you can get out of there with a win by any means necessary, 5-0 going to the bye, at that point, you assume that guys are going to start getting healthier. And I'm not just talking about Rising. I'm talking about Samote Pepa, if he's not ready, or Connor O'Toole, if he's not ready, or just you're getting healthier with the stretch run coming and with USC coming and Oregon and Washington by any means necessary. And yeah, like you need to probably let Nate cook a little more than he's, you know, been, but whatever you have to do, it doesn't matter how ugly, it doesn't matter how much of a slog fest. And I made this point on yesterday's podcast, there are no style points. There are never any style points, and there are especially no style points when your number one quarterback is out and you are trying to get by. I don't like get by, but we're going to go with that. You're trying to get by with your redshirt freshman who has only started twice by any means necessary.
Yeah, and you know, and I'm speaking more as a, you know, like a fan, right? Like I'm sitting here looking at this as like the fans are frustrated. So I agree with you on the journalistic side. Like I actually am very much so on that side. I think, you know, I was trying to paint the picture of what the fans are frustrated by, and they're not wrong, right? And I think you can be both, right? The reality is Nate is not going to throw for 400 yards against Oregon State, right? If you get over 200, I think that's an accomplishment.
That's a great night.
I think that gives Utah a very good chance to win, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I say that knowing that, like, look, you do have to rein it in. And Kyle's talked about there's always a way to win a game, and you know exactly what his style is going to be. He's going to try to grind this out. It doesn't mean that he's not going to try to exploit some things in Oregon State and they're not going to try to do it. I don't think it's going to be the same strategy where, you know, barring, you know, Utah getting a couple turnovers or whatever that may be, I just don't see them just grinding to a halt in this game. It doesn't play in their advantage on the road. At home, it's much easier. You've got the advantage. You've got a crowd behind you. You can't play from like that way, right? So I think Kyle and Andy are going to be a little bit more aggressive this week. I think you're going to see Nate have a few more shots. Whether that works, we'll find out, right? I mean, that's the key, right? You got to find out. But if Utah can't develop any sort of passing game, I think this is a long night for them. I think Utah's defense can do as much as they can, and there's a very good chance that they could potentially, you know, keep those points low for Oregon State as well, turn DJ Uiagalelei over or whatever it may be. But they've got to find something. They have to relax that defense, or you're going to find your running backs not able to be successful. So It's going to be a tough night. This is not going to be one of those games where I think either one of these teams come out of it satisfied, unless you manage to, you know, pull away and win by double digits. Yeah. I think this is just going to be one of those games where you come out, whether it's Oregon State or Utah, and you just take a deep breath and say, we did it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be pretty.
No. However you have to get it done, get out of there, get on the plane, bye week, get healthy, and you still have everything in front of you. Now, look, one loss, if you're talking about at least getting back to Vegas for the Pac-12 championship game, one loss is not a detriment. No. You're still in the mix at one loss, but you know what you have coming in front of you. And the notion that not only Utah, but anybody would run the table against what Utah has coming from October 21st onward, that's just not a realistic notion. So one loss is not a detriment, but it's not great either if you're hoping to get back to Vegas.
Well, it's crazy to think that of those games, Oregon State, in theory, should be the easiest of that bunch, right? Like,
which is nuts.
It is nuts. Like, yeah. Years ago, you would say that and nobody would blink an eye, right? But like, Oregon State is now at a far different level, but you've got a gauntlet coming up. You've got USC, yeah. You've got Oregon, you've got Washington. You know, these are tough teams that Utah can't afford. You need that assurance to be able to have maybe one of those losses in one of those three games, but right. You need to be able to like manage those expectations. So it'll be interesting. You know, I don't know that anybody has a good idea. If you're betting on this game, kudos to you, because like you're just throwing money at the wall. I wouldn't bet money on this game personally. That I don't know. You've either got expendable cash that I don't have, or I don't know. So
I'm not one to give out gambling advice for sure, but I mean, the spread opened at, I believe, Oregon State giving 1.5. Mm-hmm. It jumped up in some books in Vegas to 3.5. It's kind of settled in that 2.5-3 range, which is an indication that it's going to be close and it's going to be low scoring. And there's not going to be a ton of points. So, I mean, that's what I'm going with. I would be really surprised if either of these teams scored even into the high 20s. Like, that's the type of night I think it's going to be. Again, like 2017, 17-14, somewhere in there. And I just genuinely can't decide who's going to win.
Yeah.
That's the type of game it's like shaping up as, really.
It's wild. So when I put my pick in by tomorrow morning, when you see it on KSL.com, your guess is as good as mine, because I'm not getting it until tonight. So let's just briefly look at the Beavers. So we talked about this, you know, DJ Uiagalelei, he's been okay this season. He hasn't been anything spectacular, and I think that's where that frustration comes. They've played San Jose State, UC Davis, San Diego State, and then lastly they played Washington State, which, you know, didn't really go well for them. He was only 50%, threw for 198 yards, had an interception and a touchdown. He was even worse against San Diego State in his passing. So, you know, there are advantages here for Utah. I think he can be polished at times. We saw what he did at Clemson. Anybody that's a fan of college football has seen what he's done at Clemson. I don't think you're seeing anything different here at Oregon State. He's got talent, just like we said with DJ or Dante Moore. Like, he has talent, and if you can, you can get burned by him. But I think Utah has a good game plan that can potentially limit what DJ does. Is there anything from him that maybe shocks you, or anything that you see that maybe Utah should be worried about going into this game?
I mean, obviously his size, right? He's 6'4", 250, and not only is he that, you know, hulking sort of presence in the pocket, he can move, mm-hmm. and he can get out of the pocket, and he can run. He's got, what, 5 rushing touchdowns on the season? So
correct.
They're not afraid. And even back, you know, during his time at Clemson, even if you watched him in high school, like, his offensive coordinators are not afraid to have him tuck it and go. And when you have a guy that size, he is a load if he gets downhill, right? Like, consider, you know, Oregon State's in the red zone, even inside the 10, like, don't be surprised if there's a keeper called. And if he gets up the middle, if he gets to the second level and he meets like Lander Barton on the second level, I'd be curious to see who wins that like matchup like that. Like, that's the type of player that DJ is. So I personally thought that he would be a little bit better to this point, especially given the level of competition that Oregon State has played. Again, San Jose State, UC Davis, a San Diego State team that is down. That was the Beavers' first 3 games. I feel like I thought he would have been better, and he has not been lights out. I wouldn't even say that he's been good, really.
Yeah.
I don't think he's been good. I would call it serviceable. Nick Daschle makes a point about Aiden Childs, freshman kid, kind of like waiting in the wings, waiting his turn. I agree with Nick. This is probably not a night where you see Aiden Childs, but that is something to keep in the back of your mind if Utah's defense, you know, travels, so to speak, and they're getting to DJ, right? They're getting home with four. If he's struggling, maybe you see Aiden Childs. I don't expect it, but again, in the back of my mind, that feels like a, you know, a faint possibility.
To me, this feels like a very interesting matchup for Morgan Scalley to scheme. I wouldn't be surprised if they at least early kind of didn't put as much pressure on that line. Maybe they do because they got a key in on the run. But I'm curious to see if they get over aggressive and really try to push DJ or what they do. This is just interesting to me because I'm curious to see how they scheme against that. I want to see like what's going on and kind of what happens there. And that to me, this is going to be a defensive battle, and you're going to see that, especially with kind of getting to the next point, is Damian Martinez and Deshaun Fenwick, two guys that can run the ball, right? Like Damian Martinez going into the season, I contended that he was probably the best running back in the league. Sure. I think we've seen a lot from him. He's got a lot of yards this year, but he only has one touchdown. I mean, he's done a lot of damage, but he hasn't really been the guy that they've used there. Fenwick has been the guy that's got four touchdowns, rushing touchdowns. So they're kind of mixing it up a little bit. But look, this is an area where if Utah can't figure out how to stop the run, this could be a very, very, very long night for Utah, especially if it is rainy, you're slipping around, missing tackles, whatever that may be. I don't think the weather's going to honestly play too much of an impact now that it's getting closer, but I don't want to throw this out in the world, but there's always that game where the defense has just a night where you're like, what happened? Right. This always feels like one of those nights that could happen. I think Utah's defense has to play, I don't want to say perfect, but I have to say as near perfect as they did against UCLA to come away with this win. It's just harder on the road.
Now, conversely, let's just remember that last year when these two teams played at Rice-Eccles, right? That was the game where Clark Phillips had three picks, and including a pick six early. The Utah defense shut down Damian Martinez and Deshaun Fenwick. It was a long day for those two, but the difference now is for whatever struggles DJ Uiagalelei is having, Oregon State is in a better quarterback situation now than what they were dealing with last year walking into Rice-Eccles. So just some food for thought, right? The defense has faced Martinez and Fenwick before and fared well against them. And you could probably look at some of these early numbers from Martinez and Fenwick and point to the level of competition. Again, they put up 42 points against San Jose State and they beat up UC Davis, right? An FCS team from the Big Sky. It's all relative, right? You're putting up these gaudy numbers. Not to say that they're not terrific players, because they are, but just you have to put it in some context about what the level of competition has been. Look, the level of competition Utah has played, you look at the defense, they've played and beaten three Power Five teams. So just, you know, a little bit of context behind some of these early numbers, especially as you move your way through the month of September.
Yeah, and that's the difficult time or part of this season where you have a team like Oregon State who was projected in the top 25. They are a good team, but they haven't played anybody, right? I think San Diego State was expected to be kind of one of their hardest opponents of non-conference play, and San Diego State is nowhere near what even Utah played a couple years ago, right?
Yes.
This is a bad San Diego State team, and they played them close for a little bit. I mean, it was 26-9, so it's hard to say that's close, but it was much more of a battle. So, you know, reading into these stats is difficult at this time of the year because you don't know what they've got, and their only real tough competition, they got beat, and they got beat badly in terms of, like, you know, the defensive performance. It was a close game, but it was not a
the yardage number that they gave up is just abhorrent. Exactly. 528. That's insane.
Morgan Scalley would die if he had that, and that's not to say he hasn't had those, but like, in a game
those
like this,
those are very, very rare for Utah defense. I'm just saying.
It is. And those usually come against an air raid type team and a USC type game.
Yeah.
Are much more expected. And sleep. But defensively, this is a team. They rank fairly similar to Utah in how they do things, right? That scoring defense, they rank 30th. They allow 17.8 points per game. Rushing defense, they're an eighth. Utah's fourth. Passing defense, they are much more significantly worse than Utah. They're at 107th. Yeah. They give up almost 257 yards a game, so that's pretty crazy. Total defense, they're 46. So, I mean, this is a good team. It's got some a talent there. I will say on paper, UCLA is probably a better defense, and that sounds crazy to say. But I think it's probably there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the fact that Chip Kelly has gotten UCLA's defense kind of up to snuff now, because it was, you know, that was not the case for the first few years under Chip Kelly. Even last year when they won nine games, but UCLA remains kind of this dark horse championship game contender, even with the loss to Utah. There's still like some possibility. Like, I'm not completely discounting UCLA as being a factor as we move towards like Halloween or early November, quite frankly.
So like we said, this is going to be one of those games that comes down to, you know, just a lot of, you know, maintaining mistakes and just kind of keeping things in check. I'm, you know, as we wrap this episode up, we're going to go a little short today because we did a lot yesterday. I'm going to mix up the question for you. You were expecting me to ask, how does Utah lose this game?
I was ready for the main question,
I got to keep you on your toes, you know.
Let's go.
So I'm going to change this. Kyle Whittingham says that there's always a strategy to win each game. So in your view, what is the strategy for Utah to win this game? This is where you get paid all the money. This is where you get paid. Show me you can be an offensive coordinator, head coach. Go get that money right off to the sunset. Come on, man.
My guy. The first thing you have to do is you do have to, if not stop the run, you do have to limit the run. Okay. I don't think that they're going to hold Damian Martinez and Deshaun Fenwick to, you know, 9 yards on 32 attempts as they did against UCLA. But you have to slow that down. If you are giving up 7, 8, 9 yards on the ground at a time, and you're just not getting a push up front, and you're letting Martinez and Fenwick kind of run wild, that is a recipe for disaster. That is how this game turns into, as you alluded to earlier, that's how this game turns into a 2-score road loss. You have to stop the run, or at least limit the run. And then, look, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel here. Make DJ look pedestrian, which he has done, or which he has looked like for the bulk of these four games. So look, Utah football is not exotic. And like, again, this is not a night to try to reinvent the wheel. You know, slow down the run and make DJ uncomfortable. And if you want to go a little deeper, as we talked about already, let Nate cook a little bit more. I don't think you have to open up the whole bag, but you have to get a little bit more out of Nate Johnson. So again, I'm not saying anything earth-shattering here. I think we've hit on all these points already earlier in the show. Again, matter of survival, doing what you have to do. And what you have to do here to not lose this game is to do the simple things, right? Stop the run, make the quarterback uncomfortable, and let your own quarterback do a little bit more. And look, maybe Nate Johnson will surprise you. He's a smart, cerebral football player, but Nate Johnson is just inexperienced. At some point, maybe he'll surprise you. If you let him do a little bit more, and it's not like he's not preparing, it's not like he's not getting reps, and it's not like he's not studying. If you give him a little bit more, maybe he surprises you. I don't think he throws for like 257 like Oregon State is giving up. But, you know, if you give him a little bit more, maybe he, you know, maybe he comes through with like, I don't know, what are we talking about? 16 of 26 for like 190? It's a huge night.
Yeah.
If Nate Johnson goes something like that, Utah's going to win.
And that's the thing. Like, I kind of already assume that the defense is just going to do its thing, whether it's as, you know, UCLA level or if it's, you know, whatever. I don't think that matters. I think that's kind of a given. And so for me, I think for Utah to win this game, it has to be something like letting Nate have a little bit more opportunities in the passing game. I don't think he's going to get up to that 257 yards. I mean, if he does, I think that bodes so well for Utah that, you know, this works, right? So I just think you have to be marginally better. You have to do enough. And if they can do well and exploit Oregon State in the passing game, I think that turns into a Utah win. And maybe I'm convincing myself into that after we've talked. I don't really know still. But I think, you know, that's kind of that strategy. The defense, you know, if they don't live up to their expectations, of course it's going to be a loss. Like, I get that.
Yeah.
Like, and so I'm kind of just already assuming that. But I think for Utah, they have to find a way. You have to score at minimum 21 points in my eyes to make this work. whether that's a real benchmark number or not, Utah can win this 17-14. I get it. To me, for me to feel comfortable picking Utah in this game, I think it has to be at least 21 points that they can score. Maybe 14 of those are from the defense. But if
nobody would complain.
Nobody would complain.
Nobody should complain anyway. I'm sure people will, but nobody should. But if you're your usage of, in terms of Nate Johnson, your usage of marginally better, I think that's well said. If Nate Johnson is marginally better, not exceptionally better, not drastically better, if Nate Johnson is marginally better, that bodes well. And he has not played poorly, to be clear.
Yes.
But if he is marginally better, I think Utah wins this game. That's well said by you.
Oh, look at me. I'm just kidding. No. I don't know. I just don't know.
Short weeks are weird. Like, you don't know what to make of short weeks. You know, like in the past, Utah has played weekday games off a bye. Like, mm-hmm. That's been a thing. But this is weird. Like, you just came off like a defensive slugfest without Rising. And now you're not only is it a short week, but you're a short week on the road, which means you're traveling on Thursday and you're playing on Friday. These weeks are always kind of wonky. I'm not like doing this for content. I really don't know who's going to win this game. Well, I don't know.
And Friday nights are always just weird. Like, that's where the true Pac-12 After Dark just takes full, you know, like that. This is where a lot of these teams just have some weird stuff happen. So, you know, go into this game with little expectations, come out of it. If Utah wins, happy. I that's the best you can hope for.
Look, Pac-12 After Dark, you're right, does get weird. But the last time, correct me if I'm wrong, the last time Utah played on a Friday night was at Stanford in 2021, and that game was over midway through the first quarter.
That's true.
I was done writing like 8 minutes into the third quarter, and I think phenomenal. I took a nap until the final gun at Stanford. So who knows?
That was the easiest game story to write, because it was just like, oh, another touchdown. Another touchdown.
First drive was like 9 plays, 60-something yards. They did anything they wanted. Rising and TJ Pledger and Key, just right down the field. I'm like, just gonna take a nap.
Look, I you know, this is not how this game's gonna be, but like, can you imagine like Razor Stadium with like the chainsaw trying to blare as it's like nobody's cheering, and it's just like,
oh my god.
I'm not gonna lie, I've heard that chainsaw in my head all week because of practice. Sure. For those that don't know, Kyle Whittingham, he loves to kind of pipe in sound so he gets the crowd noise, but this week they've put in that loud chainsaw just to kind of simulate that. And oh boy, man, listening to that all week has been, it's stuck in my head. It's like the USC fight song. It just won't die.
But jokes aside, I mean, if you are a Utah fan and you are traveling to this game, you know, Corvallis is kind of like this quintessential college town. It gets a bad rap. Like, I've enjoyed my limited time in Corvallis. Like, go explore the campus. It's a very underrated, very underappreciated Pac-12 college town, in my personal opinion.
I completely agree, and I'm here for it. I'm a little nervous. I got a electric vehicle, and I'm driving all the way from Portland, and I'm not sure.
You are.
I don't.
Why
I didn't,
do you do that?
The thing is, I didn't
worry about you.
I don't think I scheduled it. All of a sudden, I got the notification today, and it's like, oh, you have this electric vehicle, and I'm like, I've gotten them like in LA or something because it's just close. I'm sweating, man. Like, so if I don't make the game, you know why? But.
Oh my god, now I'm gonna be texting you at like midnight on Friday, like, is everything okay?
It's gonna be 2 a.m. and I'm trying to find a place to charge my car.
Tell your wife you love her before you leave. Just who knows.
No, you're not wrong. All right, this has gone off the rails, so it's time to end. But thanks for listening, as always, to the Utah Checkdown podcast. We appreciate your support. It's been great this year. We've had a lot of listeners, and we've got a lot of feedback, which has been great. So keep it up. Give us your questions. Hit us up. We're happy to chat. Have a great one.
Thanks, guys.